Hi, Eric. What are we going to talk about today? I have one topic I want to bring up, but other than that, I don't have anything. I have a few thoughts, but the first one was to do with your freaking weekend from Sunday.
Yeah, great.
Well, so, is there anybody else who would ever make a comment like Jack Nicklaus made about, oh, you'd just be so confident you just win them all? I mean,
I know. I love that.
It's like, would anybody else actually react that way?
So what? So what Matthew's talking about is at heathpost.com, if you go to a post called The Freakin' Weekend, 1971, there is, here comes our neighbor by. there's a Sports Illustrated article from this week in 1971 where Jack Nicklaus is already looking ahead to the 1972 season of Majors. And he says that, well, that year, that coming up in 1972, there's a better chance than normal for somebody to actually win the Grand Slam. And the reason, his primary reason is because he feels like the courses are exceptionally difficult. Of course, the Masters always stays at Augusta, but then the other three, and I'm not looking at the post right now, so I think it's Muirfield for British Open, and it doesn't make any difference. But anyway, the three courses are particularly strong, and he thinks that'll discourage kind of like fluke winners. And and so he says that after, if you were to somehow win the Masters and win the U.S. Open, then it would be a matter of super confidence taking over.
Sure.
Yeah. That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I just love the notion of him.
Super confidence.
What an odd thing. Like, I wonder what the arrangements were that article came to pass in the Sports Illustrated, you know, in June of 1971, you know?
Right.
It's an odd thing to be writing about at this point.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So was he talking about 72 or was he talking about 71?
No, he's already blown it for 71 and he's really mad. I know that's what's going on. It's because he had been playing well and I'm pretty lost to, but the 71 Masters, he was in position, like going into Sunday.
That's true. June's already. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the 71 Masters, like basically, he just didn't make enough of the charge on the at the end.
Right.
You know, like he. And I think I'm pretty sure he finished second, but but in any event, it's a miss. He was. You know, Nicklaus has had a really interesting career since I started doing this, because there was some sense, like when I started doing this with the 1968 issues, that his prime had already passed and he had been sort of a flash in the pan and he was on his way down. And now he is absolutely, you know, ramping up his dominance. I mean, he's like winning tournaments left and right. And there was a strong sense that he was going to win the 71 Masters and make a run at the Grand Slam this year. And so now he's already looking ahead to 72. And I don't have, you know, I'm sure I've heard, but I don't keep enough golf history like at the front of my brain. I have no idea if that's going to happen or not. I mean,
I can tell you, cause I'm looking at it right now. So in 71, he went into, if I'm reading this right. Yeah. He went into the final round tied for first place.
Okay.
He and Charles Cootey were tied.
Okay.
Nicklaus would go on to shoot a 72.
Okay.
Even par. And Cootey would shoot a 70.
Okay.
Nicklaus's big fall would actually be on the front nine. He would bogey both 4 and 5. And he would bogey again later on 12. So he was never able to make a charge on the back.
Yeah.
So that ended his chance in the 71 Masters. Trevino then won the U.S. Open in 71 and the British Open in 71.
Oh, wow.
So he went back to back. So he's getting that super – so Trevino's getting that, you know, super confidence built up.
That's right.
But then Nicklaus would win the PGA in 71.
Okay. All right.
Then Nicklaus would win the Masters in 72 and the U.S. Open in 72.
Whoa.
So he actually won three majors in a row. He went P PGA yeah. Masters, U.S. Open. And then who do you think won the British?
Okay, wait a second. 72 British Open.
Yeah. So remember, it's gone Charles Coody, Trevino, yeah. Trevino, Nicholas, Nicholas, Nicholas.
Okay, so are we getting into – no, Johnny Miller's still too young. It's not.
Well, him. Miller came in second at the 71 Masters.
Oh, okay, so he's definitely a contender. Right. I mean, he's definitely on the stage now.
It's,
I don't know. I'm going to go – I'll just go Frank Beard just to bring it in.
It's Trevino again.
Oh, Trevino.
So he and I mean, that's incredible to me.
That is incredible. That they
dominated.
In the last six majors.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's amazing to think that they actually split that. You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
But
Lee Trevino has kind of disappeared.
Oh, and who do you think came in second in that 72?
I'll just guess Nicholas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So he almost made the run.
Well,
he was
so
that close.
So I mean, does Nicholas ever win a Grand Slam? Did he ever?
No, nobody ever has.
Nobody has. All right. The closest was like that Tiger deal where he won them in a row,
but not in the same year, right?
Right.
I think Tiger's the closest anybody's come. Yeah. So if Nicholas had done that, if he had won that British Open that year, he would have tied what. You know what, yeah. Tiger did. But, yeah, it's crazy. Well, and Nicholas, in that 72 British Open, he shot a 66 in the final round to get within one stroke of the win. Yeah.
That's amazing. Who won the PGA Championship, though?
Gary Player, I think.
Oh, okay. So it's just, you know.
So then all, yeah. So, but yeah, you're right. Miller's going to pop up the next year and win his first major. And, you know, we're getting really close to, you know, Nicholas just aging out. I mean, we're getting really close to Nicholas not being so incredibly dominant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause Player's going to pop. And then we get Tom Watson. So,
yeah, Tom Watson comes up in like 77. Is when he gets really rolling.
Let's see. Watson wins his first one in 75.
Oh, wow. Okay. Much earlier.
So, but you're right. In 77, he wins too.
The thing that made me think, well, maybe Nicholas does win a Grand Slam, because I was watching my wife and I, as we were going to bed the other night, we were watching a Bob Newhart episode.
Hey, we were watching Newhart the other day too.
Newhart or Bob Newhart?
The first old show, yeah, the Chicago show.
Yeah, the Chicago show. So we were watching that, and he mentions, he talks about how he would like to, like, he's taking time away from work and what he really wants to. He's talking to Jerry and about how all he wants to do is talk about about Jack Nicklaus. And so I'm thinking, okay, that show was from 1973, so maybe he had just won the Grand Slam, you know, and he was like a, I mean, obviously he was a big star.
Well, here's what Nicholas did, just because I think it's fun, from 1971, we'll say, to 1975, okay, in the majors. In 71, he tied for second at the Masters, second at the U.S. Open, fifth at the British, and won the PGA, right?
Wow.
Then he won the Masters, won the U.S. Open, came in second at the British, and then tied for 13 in the PGA. Then he went third in the Masters, fourth in the U.S. Open, fourth in the British Open, and won the PGA. Then he went fourth in the Masters, 10th in the U.S. Open, third in the British, second in the PGA. And then in 75, he won the Masters, came in seventh in the U.S. Open, third in the British Open, and won the PGA.
So
I mean, only one time in that, five-year stint was he outside the top 10. That's insane. Yeah.
That is insane. Now, I would guess that Tiger had a very similar run. And what I wonder about, what I would be interested to see in the
coverage. I'm going to look that up right now.
In the original coverage of those tournaments, I wonder if the tone was like, wow, this is incredible what Nicholas is doing. Or I wonder if the tone was like, oh, another missed, you know, like near miss sort of thing. That's what it, I would say it feels like there is a difference in coverage. Because Dad used to talk, Dad loved Nicholas. And Dad used to talk all the time. He was as impressed. He was more impressed. He always did talk about how many times Nicholas finished second and third.
Right.
And he was just totally impressed. There was no sense of like, you know, oh, he choked. Or, you know, there was no talk
sure.
about that.
Yeah, yeah,
finished
yeah.
third was absolutely fantastic in a major, you know. And sure. to be able to do it consistently was stunning. And I remember talking to anyway, feeling that way about Tiger. But the feeling was always like, oh, he – you know, he let another chance to get one of his majors away, you know, like, and so he's, where is he on this like total number of majors versus Nicholas, you know, like
right.
there was focus on that for a while. So,
well, I think the difference I would say is that, and I've noticed this in the past. So Tiger, he's won 14 majors.
Yeah.
He came in second 6 times. He came in third 4 times. Nicholas won 18 majors. He came in second 19 times.
Golly.
He came in third 9 times.
That's astounding.
I mean, it's insane, Eric. It's, I mean, I understand why we all feel like Tiger is the best.
But there's really no argument.
But when you look at the numbers, I mean, they're just, nobody was that consistent across the majors. I mean, Tiger's best run was probably like 99 to 2002.
Yeah.
During that time, he won 7 majors. But he finished, when he didn't win, he finished outside the top 10 during that time, like, what, 5 times? Which still is astounding, you know?
Yeah.
But compare that to one time for Nicholas. I mean, it's right. It's crazy. It's
not the same. Yeah, it's not the same. That's very good perspective. I thought, you know, just offhand, I thought it was much closer in terms of numbers. In fact, I would have guessed, I mean, I knew the total wins was still in Nicholas's favor, but I would have guessed that, like, in terms of total, like, top 5, top 10 finishes, that sort of thing, that actually right. Tiger had done it for longer.
Well, the sad part is that, you know, Tiger won't, I mean, he'll never get even close to the amount of events. And I mean,
yes.
Nicholas played in 164 majors.
Yeah.
You know, Tiger's only played in 76.
Wow.
So, you know, it's, yeah. I mean, a lot of those for Nicholas, you know, are obviously later in his life, too. But so you can just dismiss a lot of those. But still, I mean, I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think it's easy to forget how dominant, because Tiger was, I think the thing about Tiger that made it so was that, I mean, he literally would win every tournament he would appear in, it seemed like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of crazy. And, of course, now you look back on it, you realize, well, yeah, he was also playing the same tournaments every year.
Yeah.
Right.
Playing the same courses.
Yeah, I mean, he always liked to go back to the exact same courses every time, and he dominated those. So.
Right.
I don't know. All right, here's a trivia question for you. Who came in second place in the 1997 Masters?
Is that the Rocco Mediate?
This is the Masters that he won by 12 strokes. Right.
Oh,
this
okay.
was his first major.
I don't know. I'll say, okay, is it couples?
That's,
I think couples.
That's
back.
A good guess, actually. It's Tom Kite. Yeah.
Tom Kite, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should have been well at the end of Kite's, you know, time, I would
think. I think at that point, I don't think Kite had won his – I think Kite – didn't Kite at the end of his career win a major?
He won the U.S. Open in 92, so 5 years ahead of him.
Or then. Okay. I was thinking he got one a good bit later. Okay. I don't know. Man, I'm just not, you know, I get excited about it now watching the majors, but yeah, I didn't pay attention to a lot. I have no sense of like Fred Cobb. I have no sense of 1990s golf until
sure.
Tiger.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah. I know what you mean. I just think that quote from Nicholas is such classic
is
Nicholas.
Great.
Like,
so great. I'll tell you, another thing it does make me think about this conversation,
when we were kids, I very much had a sense of like Lee Trevino being, you know, I mean, I never thought that he was, I never had the sense of him being like as big a star as Nicholas, but he was absolutely probably number two in my mind, you know?
Yeah.
And like,
until
and
Watson.
Now,
Watson really, I mean, Watson, we saw Watson at his peak, so.
Yeah, then Watson comes in, yeah. and he becomes, but I'm talking about like when I really first started, you know, like flipping through a Sports Illustrated or things like that, which would have been like 74, 75, 76, that range. Goff to me kind of was, I would imagine the only golfers I could name were Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, you know, maybe Johnny Miller.
Tom Weisskopf.
Weisskopf, because of his, but you know what? You're right. But you know why that is a lot is because I think he and Nicklaus went to college together. And so like Weisskopf and Nicklaus kind of got named in the same.
Sure.
They were always talking to Weisskopf about Nicklaus and stuff like that. I think they both went to Ohio State.
Yeah, it's funny. Trevino, you're right, though. I mean, Trevino was always a big name. Gary Player, he was a big name. I mean, by the time we were old enough, we had missed Trevino at his peak.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I always remember him.
Can we pause the show for a second? The ladies just pulled in the driveway.
All right, sure.
I want to say hello. Hold on, and I'll call you right back.
All right. Started up again.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
I got home earlier than I was expecting.
All right, so Eric's coming back from break.
So,
that's, we should put our ads in there.
That's true.
Anyhow, that was my one.
Well, that's good.
Big thing. I love that. Plus, you know. And I have to say, every time I ever go to watch Love American Style, it's always the one episode I've seen the last time I saw Love American Style. So I feel your pain there.
It's such a horrible show.
it's like everything great about the 70s, you know, all wrapped up into one show.
So, you know, that show was they took pilots that they weren't buying. And, you know, pitched pilots. And that's where they came up with their story.
Really?
Yes, that's exactly.
Really?
And so, yes. And so those are kind of, yeah. And
that's
I think
very cool. I didn't know that.
It's cool. It was pretty funny. That's how they came up with those little stories. And the great thing, I mean, I love putting one on in the background just because I love the laugh track. I love the, you know, it just, I mean, it's exactly like, it is the epitome of that early 70s sitcom TV. So, you know.
Yeah, it's classic. So let me ask you something. Did you guys ever go to Red's much? Red's Donuts?
A little.
I think I went one time, maybe. I don't remember us ever really going. We used to go to Blackhawk and get.
Yeah.
Their breakfast. They used to have. Dad used to go there and get some stuff. If he was in the, we just never did donuts. It seems like.
Yeah, yeah, we did rarely.
So if you do you eat donuts now?
That's total. Actually, having just said that we did rarely, that's totally not true. We had a huge stint. Actually, I'd forgotten. I wasn't thinking about this. We rarely went and got donuts and then brought home like a dozen. We rarely did that.
Oh yeah.
However, we had a huge season of we went to Donut Castle. You remember Donut Castle on Jackson Street?
Oh, yeah. I was trying to remember where the other donut place was. Thank you. Yes.
Well, there was a few. Actually, I get that. There's a you know you're from Paducah Facebook group, and there's significant donut conversations that go on there. There was another one called Munals that was over on Clark Street, I think. But in any event, that was David Feather's family's donut place. And
never heard of that one.
Yeah. And then, but most people were definitely Red's people, but we did Donut Castle.
We did Donut Castle too. Yeah.
Yeah. We did Donut Castle. And now that's interesting because you guys moved to Paducah about the same time we did.
Yeah.
And I went, I've got an essay that I've written about Donut Castle. And in fact, I'm going to get this out and try to sell it next year in advance of National Donut Day. But the deal, I looked that up one time about 10 years ago. I looked up Donut Castle and they had just opened like basically at the same time. My family had been moving into Paducah. So we were probably, you know, you can just imagine. I mean, it was the new place in town. And so let's go try the new donut place.
Sure.
You know, yeah. Sort of, and didn't have that sort of like sense of loyalty to Reds or to Munals.
Right.
And yeah, we used to go in Donut Castle, but the huge deal in Donut Castle for us, we would go in the evenings and we would get, it's amazing. Like, we would each get two donuts, which is astounding to think about now, like, to sit down in the evening and eat two donuts. But we did, like, a lot. And we would go there a lot in the summer because they had air conditioning. And we did.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So we would go. And I mean, it was just great. It was great to sit in that air conditioning and eat like a big Long John and a cream corn.
So if you're going to, if you're going to buy a donut, what are you looking for? Like, what's your go-to donut?
Apple fritter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I didn't know you were an apple fritter. I love apple fritters. So.
They're great, aren't they?
Yeah, they're about – I know what you mean. Like, I always like to try everybody's fritters just to see what they're like.
Because they're very different. From
yeah, oh, yeah. Now, the ones they had in that place in Graham, downtown Graham, were like – you felt like you were dead about halfway through it. I mean, they were great, but – ooh, man. Out here, the big thing in the Northwest is maple.
Yeah.
You know, maple donuts. That's,
don't you?
Huh?
You hate that, don't you? You're not a maple guy.
You know, it doesn't have much appeal to me. It's not like I won't eat it if somebody puts it in front of me, but.
It was my most underrated flavor of a few years ago.
I like the competition there. Hmm.
Exactly.
Cayenne pepper, maybe. That's the, funny.
Yeah, I really like a fritter, an apple fritter, and I like them very dense and you know, kind of heavy. I love that kind of apple fritter.
I like cream fields. I don't like custard fields. I like cream fields.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, there's no donut. I've never had a bad donut in my life.
Yeah, never. I don't think I have either.
Oh, of course not. They're all great.
I made the mistake in Philadelphia one time of, so the, maybe you can tell me if they were like this in Washington when you were there, but the truck vendors in Philadelphia, how do I explain this? They would always try to like sucker you in to be like, oh, you're one of my customers, you know? Mm-hmm. And
oh, like, really?
You know, like, oh, yeah, yeah. If they saw you go into another truck, for instance, like Margaret had instances where she actually got yelled at, you know, like, hey, what are you doing?
Oh, no.
You're supposed to shop at our truck, you know.
I would hate that.
Oh, it was awful. So the SEPTA was on strike.
Okay.
And we were having – I was just walking to work. And yeah. I was walking by – so I went through Penn's campus, and there was a truck there on the main track going through Penn's campus. And I stopped there one morning, and the woman had a strawberry donut.
Okay.
Excuse me. Which I love, like strawberry donuts, blueberry donuts.
Yeah.
So I bought one.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, you know, come back tomorrow. I'll have another strawberry donut for you. I'm like, oh, no, you know, don't. You know.
Yeah.
It's just a one-time thing, you know.
Right.
So the next day I'm walking into work again. I walk in by, hey, I've got your strawberry donut. You know, it's like, okay, you know. So then I started walking, you know, in other directions just to avoid that truck. But
it's pretty much what with barbershops. You know, I never go to the same barbershop more than like twice because then they start to, you know.
Think you're like one of their regulars.
I hate talking in a barbershop, but.
Yeah, the woman who I really liked to buy from in Philadelphia near my work, she was not like that at all. She didn't care, you know. She just, that's why I liked to shop there because she didn't really care.
Well,
But the thing that she used to make for breakfast,
she was going to make you uncomfortable, you know.
But now here's something that was really good that she did for breakfast. So she used to get these huge honey buns from some bakery there in Philadelphia. And what she would do is she would take it and slice it in half.
Yeah.
And then she'd put a bunch of butter on the griddle.
Oh, yeah.
And grill it, you know, griddle it with cut side down.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then she'd put it back together and wrap it up in aluminum foil so you could take it with you and stay hot. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's so good. So good.
That's good. Grilled honey buns at Waffle House. I don't know if they still are or not, but a grilled honey bun is, oh, my God, that's so good.
Yeah, there's something special about that.
Yeah, it really is.
Dad used to like to get those apple turnovers from McDonald's.
They're great.
And bring them home, and then he would put butter in a skillet and heat them up. And then he'd put ice cream on top. You know, like vanilla ice cream. Oh, man. And I wonder why my eating habits are so bad.
Exactly. But, you know, the big thing in our house is Dad wanting – he never wanted icing. Like, Mom would bake a cake, and he didn't want Mom to ice it. So Mom would always ice like a half a cat. She'd bake a cake and then she'd ice like half of it. And
so he just didn't like icing?
He didn't like icing. Huh. And then, but what he would do is he'd want to eat it. He'd put a slab of butter on his plate next to his cake and like he would run his fork through the butter before each bite.
That's
so
good.
He didn't like icing, but he wanted buttered cake.
Well, what's your dad? Was your dad, did he like glaze? On cakes? Did he ever – do you remember that?
Glaze? Glaze potato chips?
No, glaze. Like a glaze.
Oh, glaze. Nah. He didn't want any of that kind of stuff.
That's interesting.
Yeah. No, he just wanted the, like, bready cake part.
Okay.
But I don't understand it. But anyway, so Mom would – you know, she would do, like, half and half. All that stuff.
That's funny.
He always ate butter on cake. And that led to me – I got – no kidding that I've been overweight my whole life. Then I got into – I innovated off of that, and I would butter cookies for a little bit. I would swab butter like on windmill oatmeal cookies, you know, like those windmill cookies. We'd always have those or sandwich cookies or whatever. So, yeah, that was really healthy.
Cookies. You know, there's two cookies I've had since we moved out here that I really liked. One was it was at some pizza place in – Montana. Where do we go? Montezula, right? Montana?
Oh, Missoula.
Missoula, yeah. Montana, sorry. And it was at some downtown pizza place. But what they do is they take the cookie and they cook it. They bake it in the oven inside one of these like tiny iron skillets.
Oh.
Right? So they bake it fresh when you order it. So it's huge, right? And then they put a big thing of vanilla ice cream on top of it, and that's how they serve it. So the cookie's like super hot.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it's got this ice cream melting on. Oh, man, that was really good. And then there's a bagel place in downtown Moscow Bagel, where they steam all their bagels. So you order it, and then they put the sandwich together that you're going to eat, and then they steam it.
Yeah.
And they do the same with these giant chocolate chip cookies they've got. They wrap them in aluminum foil and steam them, so it's they're really good.
I'll bet they are. When food is – that's a key thing. It's places that steam, they keep their food hot with steam, even like baked potatoes and stuff like that. Oh, my gosh. That's so good. It's such a good technique.
Yeah. We like to talk about food, apparently, on this podcast. So.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is great. I want to tell one more little cookie story, and then I guess – probably better both wrap it up, but you're involved in this. My favorite cookie story was in like 2002 or 2003. You guys threw a surprise birthday party for me where we went out to the mall. You remember this? We went out to some like mall.
And
Rachel, my wife, had gotten the giant cookie from the cookie store, and it was like, it was so hot, like their air conditioner wasn't working, and so it's kind of like the icing was melted, you know, and there's a lot of icing on, because I like a lot of icing. That's like my second favorite food is icing. And, you know, there's like a lot of icing on it, because she had a whole bunch of stuff written on there, and maybe some footballs drawn and stuff like that. And we had eaten what we could. It was you guys and us and the McCrackens all before we had kids. And we're all sitting up there. And the best part about it was, so then we're like left with half a cookie to go. Like we couldn't eat it. You know,
right.
It was just so rich. And there's like icing all over the place. It's like dripping off my fingers. And in the, like at that time, I think the anthrax scare had just like, it was still pretty hot and heavy. It must have been 2002. And, you know, different things like that. You know, everybody was a little bit, more, even more tense than everybody is now.
Sure.
You know,
oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, it was brand new, that whole sense. Well, we were getting ready to throw it away. And we were like, well, let's see if anybody who's just sitting around here would want some. And like we were saying, like, nobody's going to take this because everybody's scared of everybody
right
now. And the great thing was, is it was gone like instantaneously. Even though like we were all like there was icing all over my hands and like we're using a plastic knife to cut up the cookie to hand it out and like we're touching it with our hands. People were gobbling down that cookie left and right. And I was like, yes, the people. I love the people. This is so fantastic being brave enough to take the cookie. That made me so happy in Chapel Hill.
Where was that mall? That was that mall in Raleigh, right?
Or something. I can't remember the towns out there. But that was great.
That's funny.
All right, I got to get back at it, but that was fun.
I do love the ad, though, for the L&M moments.
L&M, oh, yeah.
Just the shirt alone is worth the...
That's one like around our house on Friday night.
Oh man. All right, well, I'll talk to you later, Eric.
All right, that was fun. See you.